Chapter 33 is poetry. Sometimes it's difficult for us to know that when we look at the King James translation of it, the way it's written here. And that is probably one of the reasons it makes it difficult to really understand what's being said. I've noticed that especially prophetic poetry seems very difficult to interpret. And it's probably because it's so little is said. I mean, they just don't explain it out. Instructional poetry tends to give you a little bit more because of the way it's written. They'll give you something, and then they'll say something more about it, and then something more about it, and so on like that to emphasize it. But here we have poetry that Moses says on his way to his death. And that may also say something about how people of the time actually thought. It's not unusual as we read the scriptures, especially when we find somebody on their deathbed giving out blessings. Back in Genesis 49, we have Jacob doing that with his sons. And to really understand 33, you also need to have some understanding of what happens in Genesis 49. That they would think and speak that way. I know very few of us just start spouting off poetry. You know, I mean, there are a few people that I know that might often do that, but very few of us. I mean, we're very straightforward in our what we talk about. We don't get too flowery with our statements as we're speaking. And again, that also speaks a little bit about the difference between Hebrew poetry and our kind of poetry. There's a big difference between that and most of what this new poetry, I don't call poetry anyway, that's one of the problems that we have, especially in the translation of these things over into English. And so, as we look at it, it begins, and this is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. This is the last day of Moses' life on earth. He's on his final journey, and that particular journey is one that he must take entirely by himself. He was allowed to accompany his brother Aaron on that particular trip, but here he has to walk it by himself. As he makes this journey, imagine, if you will, the children of Israel, or at least their leaders, spreading out along the side of the road that he's traveling on up to the mountain at which he's supposed to die. And as he passes each one of the tribes, he either would reach out his staff toward them as he passed them, and he leaves this message for them as he passes each one of them. It's a picture of a father lying on his deathbed, just as we see back in Genesis 49, where Jacob calls his sons to him, and he gives a short prophetic blessing to each one of them. And that's exactly what we have here with each one of the tribes spoken of. In the next verse, and he said, the Lord came from Sinai and rose up from Mount Seir unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of his saints. From his right hand went a fiery law for them. Mount Sinai was the beginning of the great covenant made with Israel by Jehovah. The phrase rose up here literally means as the sun rising or as the dawning of the day, and shined forth along with that other phrase illustrate for us the great light that came upon the people of Israel as the Lord revealed himself through the law. He came with 10,000s of saints, or holy ones. This shows the Lord coming out from his throne in heaven with his angelic host. As the angels ministered, there was great rumbling and fire upon the mountain, and the very right hand of God wrote the law upon the tables of the stone that Moses first brought down out of that mountain to the people. He continues, yea, he loved the people. All his saints are in thy hand, and they sat down at thy feet. Every one shall receive of thy words. Again, we're back at Mount Sinai as he speaks here in this verse. He said, the Lord had loved the people of Israel, and he loved them just as he loves us. His hand holds the saint, and no one can remove him from his hand. Our Lord spoke of that being in his hand, and his hand being in the Father's hand, that no one could take us out of that place. What's pictured for us is a school class of that time. The people of Israel were at the bottom of the mountain, and as they sat there or stood there at the bottom of the mountain, the rumblings from the mountain when God spoke out audibly to the whole group and spoke to them concerning the law at the beginning. Likewise, we sit at his feet and receive his words, just as the disciples sat at the feet of Jesus and heard the words that could give life. So were the people of Israel hearing the words of God and how they could receive life from him. In verses 4 and 5 says, Moses commanded us a law, even the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. And he was king in Jeshurun when the heads of the people and the tribes of Israel were gathered together. The Lord spoke and ruled, as it were, through Moses. The law commanded through Moses was the inheritance, or the better that translate that as the heritage of the congregation of Israel. An inheritance is something that you can go and spend in one place. A heritage is something that remains. And as each preceding generation of Israel would come along, the law that was given stood firm and remained for them so that they would know the Lord. The Lord was the king of Israel, for they were all present at that time, and they all gave their assent to the covenant at Mount Sinai. After he speaks these things in general concerning the children of Israel and Jehovah, he begins in verse 6 with the individual tribes. It says, "Let Reuben live and not die, and let not his men be few." "Let Reuben live" is equivalent to the phrase that we might use, "Long live Reuben," or "God save Reuben." "And not die" takes us to the future, where Reuben lives in an area where many attacks are made upon him continually by surrounding enemies. He was in a place where those enemies had easy access to the land, and that's where he was placed. He said, "Let not his men be few." This has the idea of dwindling numbers of them, which would occur during the attacks. But even during the Exodus, Reuben lost nearly 3,000 men between the numberings at the beginning of the book of Numbers and the one at the end. And by David's time, most of their land had been taken away from them by Moab. In verse 7, "And this is the blessing of Judah. And he said, Hear, Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him unto his people. Let his hands be sufficient for him, and be thou a help to him from his enemies." Judah, as we know, would take the lead for the battle for the land of Canaan. The blessing is that the Lord will hear their prayer and protect them in the fight, and to give them sufficient strength to win the battle. In verse 8, "And of Levi he said, Let the Thummim and the Urim be with thy Holy One, whom thou didst prove at Massah, and with whom thou didst strive at the waters of Meribah." The Thummim and the Urim were part of the high priest's equipment. And this indicates here that the priestly function that was given to Levi would remain with him. At Massah and Meribah, Aaron and Moses had to stand against the people in order to honor God. And so it's a reference back to the tribe of Levi standing with these two against the people. In verse 9, "Who said unto his father and to his mother, I have not seen him, neither did he acknowledge his brethren, nor knew his own children, for they have observed thy word and kept thy covenant." Way back at the beginning in the problem of the golden calf, it was Levi again that stood with Moses against the people. The phrasing that's here has the idea that they even refused to take sides with their own family that was out there worshiping the golden calf, and they stood against them. Very reminiscent of one of the phrases that our Lord gives to us, that if a man, can't remember how it goes now, that if a man doesn't leave his parents or something, or, you know, anybody help me out with that one? Okay. That he's not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, or sister or brother or whatever, the whole entire family, and follow the Lord, he's not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. And so, this was the honor that was given to Levi because they stood entirely with the Lord at that time. They shall teach Jacob thy judgments, and Israel thy law. They shall put incense before thee, and whole burnt sacrifice upon thy honor. Because they stood for God, they were entrusted with teaching the law and caring for the worship at the tabernacle. Bless, Lord, his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Smite through the loins of them that rise against him, and of them that hate him, that they rise not again. Because his work is for God, his blessing is that his substance and work would be accepted. Along with that, his enemies, since he was spread throughout the entirety of Israel, he did not have one particular piece of land that Levi was supposed to hold. He was to be blessed in all his work throughout the entirety of the nation of Israel. And because he couldn't get grouped together as one family to provide protection for himself, his enemies are somewhat of a curse put on them that they would be struck through. And the idea of the loins is the area in which the enemy would be the strongest. We have the phrasing other places where you gird up your loins to be ready to fight. And so that area of the body was one that if a person was struck through that area, their strength would be gone and they would not be able to continue a fight. And so they would not be able to rise up against them again. In verse 12, "And of Benjamin," he said, "the beloved of the Lord shall dwell in safety by him, and the Lord shall cover him all the day long, and he shall dwell between his shoulders." Benjamin was the apple of Jacob's eye because his beloved Rachel died during his birth. Jacob kept Benjamin right next to him, especially after Joseph had been taken away. And he kept them there to be safe. You remember when the brothers came back and they needed Benjamin to go back to get more grain from Joseph, that Jacob refused outright to send him at that time. And it was only after great pleading by the other brothers that he would even allow Benjamin to go down to Egypt with them. Likewise, the Lord is depicted here as doing the same. The land given to Benjamin was located next to the place of the tabernacle and later the temple. In fact, the temple proper, that's the main part of the temple, actually laid inside the border of Benjamin, while the remaining part of the structure was in Judah. As God's glory covered the temple, so it would remain with Benjamin as it was on, so to speak, his very shoulder of his land, as we see. "And of Joseph," he said, "blessed of the Lord be his land, for the precious things of heaven, for the dew, and for the deep that couches beneath, and for the precious fruits brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things put forth by the moon, and for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the lasting hills, and for the precious things of the earth and fullness thereof, and for the good will of him that dwelt in the bush. Let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph and upon the top of the head of him that was separated from his brethren. His glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of unicorns. With them he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth, and they are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh received the temporal blessings of fertile land and of military power. Their lands, as it's predicted here, would have the dew and the springs of water that were in the depths of the ground. Their fruits would mature in the sunlight and would come forth in their due season or months. Okay, you can see the particular words were up there in verse 14. Okay, precious fruits brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things put forth by the moon. Okay, the moon representing the months. So everything, the plentiful vegetation on the hill mountains and hills, was well, as well as the precious things of the valleys, would be theirs. Everything would come due in its right season for them. They would also have the goodwill of God, who appeared to Moses in the burning bush, just as Joseph had God's pleasure with him whenever he was sent to Egypt. Ephraim, who had been made the head, would become strong like the bull, and with his horns he would push the people around him. This would culminate during the split kingdom era, especially during Jeroboam II, when he had such a great control over a large area of the land in the northern areas. In Deuteronomy 33:18-19, and of Zebulun, he said, "Rejoice, Zebulun, in thy going out, and Issachar in thy tents. They shall call the people into the mountain. There they shall offer sacrifices of righteousness, for they shall suck of the abundance of the seas and of the treasures hid in the sand." Zebulun was located between the lake or sea of Tiberias and the Mediterranean Sea. His going out that is mentioned here was the fact that he was involved in the sea trade. And this was also Jacob's blessing for him back in Genesis. Issachar, on the other hand, stayed at home in his tents. These two tribes are joined together in order to show cooperation. The people of Issachar became teachers of the law, calling people to the mountain. Okay, notice that it is the mountain, which would be Mount Zion, while the people of Zebulun spread the word in their travels. Zebulun pulled his living from the sea in trade and in fishing, and Issachar pulled treasures from the sand in agriculture and later on in glass making. In 20 and 21, and of Gad he said, "Blessed be he that enlarges Gad. He dwells as a lion and tears the arm with the crown of the head. And he provided the first part for himself, because there, in a portion of the lawgiver, was he seated. And he came with the heads of the people. He executed the justice of the Lord and his judgments with Israel." Gad's territory was on the east side of Jordan. Originally, it was the land of Sihon. This area was larger than any of the western tribes' areas. God is the one, it says here, who enlarged their area, because it was God who allowed them to conquer Sihon. Gadites were noted for their prowess in war. Therefore, the reference to a lion tearing the arm, or we might think of it, the arm being the servant, and the crown of the head, referring to the enemy leadership. You want to see that happening in David's time in 1 Chronicles 12, 8 through 14. There is a great reference to the Gadites who were part of his entourage while he was running from Saul. The last phrase here refers to the fulfillment of their promise to go over Jordan and help to drive out the Canaanites with the other tribes. Verse 22, and of Dan, he said, Dan is a lion's whelp. He shall leap from Bashan. Dan is represented here as a young lion leaping out of the crevices and the caves of the land of Bashan. This may very well refer to the time later on in Judges where they left their original plot of land and went out, leaped out of across in the northern area and took another area of land for themselves. In verse 23, and of Naphtali he said, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full with the blessing of the Lord, possess thou the west and the south. The land that was given to Naphtali was one of good soil and climate, indicating God's favor upon them. In fact, there's so much favor that they were satisfied or satiated with the favor of God. The area that's mentioned here, west and south, refers to the particular part of their land that was west and south of the Sea of Tiberias. In verses 24 and 25, and of Asher he said, let Asher be blessed with children. Let him be acceptable to his brethren, and let him dip his foot in oil. Thy shoes shall be iron and brass, and as thy days, so shall thy strength be. Asher's blessing was to be with many sons. He was to find favor in the eyes of the other tribes also. The area of Asher was noted for its olive trees. Therefore, we have the reference to the abundance of oil, so much that even they would be running around so that their feet would dip into it. The reference to iron and brass refers to the need for their land to be highly fortified because of its location far to the north and over against the sea coast. The blessing is that they should have the strength of youth for as long as that they live. As a footnote to the blessings given here by Moses, you may have noticed that Simeon was left out. This is not the only place where a tribe gets left out in the mentioning of all the tribes. However, a probable answer to the question of why is that the blessing that Jacob gave back in Genesis 49 linked both Simeon and Levi together at the same time. And therefore, Moses may very well have been linking the two of them together when he gave the blessing on Levi. That's only a possible answer to it. At the end, after he's gone to each one of the tribes, passes them by. He turns back and he again gives God the glory by what he says. He says, "There is none like unto the God of Jeshurun." Again, remember, Jeshurun is a reference to Israel. "And this God rides upon the heavens in thy help, and in his excellency on the sky." The picture that he paints of them is of a charioteer coming out and riding around them to provide their protection, to provide their help for them as he rides around the heavens above them. "The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms." This is this eternal God that they have. He is the one who provides for them the place where they can stay in safety, and underneath them, lifting them up continually, are his everlasting arms. "And he will thrust out the enemy from before thee, and shall say, destroy them." And so the promise to the entire group was that God would be the one that would push the people of Canaan out of the way so that they could come in. So that in Israel then shall dwell in safety alone. The idea is that each individual person in Israel would be able to walk out and sit down underneath their favorite tree and not have to worry about the enemy coming in after them. "The fountain of Jacob," okay, the posterity that would come, the following generations, "shall be upon a land of corn and wine. Also his heavens shall drop down dew. Happy art thou, O Israel. Who is like unto thee, O people saved by the Lord, the shield of thy help? And who is the sword of thy excellency? And thine enemies shall be found liars unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their high places." So his last words to Israel was that they would find success as they entered into the land of Canaan. And that pretty much ends Deuteronomy. The final chapter is merely the description of Moses as he walks up into the mountain himself, by himself, and the Lord takes him and buries him in the place that no one knows.